Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, 2015 is quickly turning into the year of compromised network news anchors. We've had Brian Williams, and now George Stephanopoulos is in the headlines for reasons I'm sure he'd rather change. This is according to Politico, and we'll talk about that fact in just a moment as well. ABC News chief anchor George Stephanopoulos has given $50,000 to the Clinton Foundation in recent years, charitable contributions that he did not publicly disclose while reporting on the Clintons or their nonprofit organization. In both 2013 and 2014, Stephanopoulos made a $25,000 donation to the 501 nonprofit founded by former President Bill Clinton. So, conflict of interest in the interview. And as I think you could probably provide a few more details for our listeners, this story got sent to Politico only because Andrew Stiles of the Washington Free Beacon asked whether Stephanopoulos had donated to the Clinton Foundation. And instead of responding to that inquiry, they just gave the story to Politico.
Yeah, that is a bad thing to do. I could use a lot of words there instead of bad. Note that this is a circumstance in which, look, first of all, kudos to Andrew Stiles for actually doing the hard journalism part of this. Dylan Byers of Politico is just doing his news. When he gets a good scoop, he's just got to write about, you know, he's going to write about it. On the other hand, you know, the Politico version of the story is, well, it was an honest mistake. ABC is standing by him. And hey, you know, it all happens. Greg, have you ever forgotten that you wrote someone a check for $50,000?
No, and I certainly wouldn't forget to mention that if I interviewed them in a favorable light.
I was going to say, have you ever covered somebody and say, oh, by the way, I wrote them a really big check a little while ago? Right. You know, Greg, this is why I have always said, and I have never donated to any candidate or their foundation, and I never will. I could say it's principled, but really, I'm just cheap. And it's nice to have that excuse. Oh, if I donate to you, I'm not objective anymore and I can't give you anything. So go away. Stop asking me for money. This is pretty appalling. The idea that George Stephanopoulos, who was the face of the Clinton campaign back in 1992 and stayed with there for years and years and years, him as co-host as this week was kind of shocking as is. And they moved to Good Morning America. The idea that he's doing any serious political journalism involving the Clintons, his former employers, his longtime friends, is pretty glaring and kind of shocking to begin with. You would think he would recuse himself. You'd think somebody else at ABC News would say, you know, I'm just not sure this is the case. But during the whole Clinton Foundation thing, I mean, he had Peter Schweitzer on, and he, Stephanopoulos was a tough questioner of him saying, you know, oh, you really haven't proven anything. There's no smoking gun, yada, yada. The whole time he did that, George Stephanopoulos was a donor to the Clinton Foundation. And he apparently thought that viewers didn't have a right to know that. And that's just appalling. Appalling. And the idea that ABC News is going to look at this and say, eh, no big deal, probably equally appalling. And oh, by the way, giving the story to Politico to make the, you know, to give them the scoop instead of these, you know, not liking to help the Washington Free Beacon, that's pretty bad as well. You put all this together, it's obviously Stephanopoulos can't do a Republican debate again. And by the way, he was the one who kept asking random questions about birth control.
Yes.
Early on in the 2012 cycle. For this one, not only it's very obvious, look, Stephanopoulos can't do a debate now. I think a lot of other folks will be saying to Reince Priebus, whoa, 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 whoa. ABC News should not get to do a Republican debate, period. You cannot have your lead political reporter making a donation to a foundation of the Democratic frontrunner, not disclose it, and then assume that everything's cool and everything's okay. I think that they have just immolated their entire system of any public faith or trust that anyone had in them to begin with. And I think it's, you know, the good news is that this now makes Stephanopoulos' skeptical response to the Schweitzer book look ridiculous. I think it further indicates this. And as somebody pointed out, there's still 1,000 Clinton Foundation donors that remain undisclosed. You think there's any more media figures in there? Certainly not unthinkable. And then the next aspect is, can Stephanopoulos do any more coverage of the Clinton campaign?
I'm sure they'll let him.
He will, shouldn't. But like, will anyone with two functioning brain cells take it as anything more than propaganda?
Not at ABC.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been completely discredited, the entire network, until they take some sort of striking, you know, some genuine response to this. And oh, by the way, you may remember back, you know, about 5 years ago, Greg, do you remember Keith Olbermann making a bunch of donations?
Yes.
And he got suspended indefinitely from MSNBC. So MSNBC has much tougher standards about this than ABC News. I mean, that's really, really stunning.
Yeah, George Stephanopoulos should be permanently suspended from coverage of presidential campaigns ever since the birth control questions in 2012. It was so obvious later on that he was carrying water for the administration, or at least the Democratic Party, by bringing up what seemed to be an irrelevant topic at the time and then turned into the whole war on women theme. He should pretty much be banned from that for life.
One last point. As we're speaking, I'm seeing this point from the illustrious Allah pundit over at Hot Air, and it's a really good point. He says it's telling that Stephanopoulos was at risk any credibility he had earned as an ABC News newsman in order to do that interview with Schweitzer himself. Right? I mean, so basically this is him jumping on the grenade for Hillary Clinton. One, it says something about this kind of cult personality around the Clintons. It says a lot about how Stephanopoulos has done his job since then. And that, you know, at some point he must have known this would come out. And, you know, anyway, the only thing is I'm sure there probably be some useful emails on this if we could ever get access to the servers, huh, Greg?
Yeah, good luck with that. All right, on to the bad martini now. And earlier this week we talked about how things looked great early on for Pat Toomey to win a second term as the Republican senator from Pennsylvania. The Wisconsin Senate race, however, is shaping up a little bit differently. We've long expected Russ Feingold to try and win back the seat he held for three terms, lost by a surprisingly wide margin to Ron Johnson in 2010. Feingold is officially back in the race now, and according to hypothetical polls leading up to this announcement, it looks like Ron Johnson's got a lot of work to do. According to Progressive Policy Polling, which does lean a little bit left, it's a 9-point lead for Feingold, 50-41. Marquette University actually has it even worse, 54 for Feingold, 38 for Johnson. So even if those are a little bit to the left, Jim, Johnson's numbers as an incumbent hovering around 40, not good at all.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things that makes it really not surprising. One, if there's any good news for us on the right, it's that Ron Johnson is running for re-election. I had a chance to speak to him in 2012, and Ron Johnson is an exceptionally bright, exceptionally driven guy. I think his heart is in the right place. I think his values are in the right place. I think he also doesn't have much patience for the nonsense that goes on Capitol Hill. I think he's very results-oriented. I think he's not a guy who likes to spend a lot of time getting caught up and, well, this guy's got to get signed on. We've got to go through this committee, and this interest group doesn't like it, and all that kind of stuff. He is a results-oriented guy. And just in that conversation we had back then, I could very easily see him saying after one term, that's it, I'm out of here. This place drives me crazy. You can't get anything done. Everybody's constantly fighting, all that kind of stuff. So the good news is he's running. On the other hand, let's face it, he is a rock-ribbed conservative running in a state that is purple at best. And Wisconsin is, you know, it's got Paul Ryan in the House. It's got Scott Walker. It's been trending. Republicans have had some success there, but we shouldn't fool ourselves. This is not Wyoming. This is not Texas. This is not even Florida. So this is a state in which Republicans are not going to have the wind at their back, and probably particularly not in a presidential election year. So Ron Johnson was always going to have a challenging one. There are some Republicans this morning who are feeling cheery about Russ Feingold running again. He did lose in 2010. He's kind of seen as damaged goods, but you know, I don't think any Republican should have any illusions about this. This is going to be a tough race for Ron Johnson to win. Doesn't mean it's impossible. You know, obviously the electorate is still taking shape, but you know, it's a tough state in a tough environment. The only good news going off our side is we've got a tough candidate on our side.
You might see a few votes that make you scratch your head from Ron Johnson trying to win back the good graces of the middle. In Wisconsin, you saw him vote to confirm Loretta Lynch, which I think surprised a few people, and you might see a few more of those as he tries to prepare himself for 2016. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And of course, the big story for much of the country, but certainly along the East Coast, was the Tuesday night derailment of Amtrak Northeast Direct number 188, just north of Philadelphia. 7 people at least have been killed. There's still a few in critical condition. Hundreds of people injured, thankfully, most of them with just a broken rib or something like that. And a lot of questions still to be answered. But one thing that we do know is that this derailment happened around a curve where the speed limit was 50 and the train was going over 100 miles an hour. Just around the time we were learning all that, and even before that, Democrats, while they were still literally looking for people and bodies to match the manifest from the train, they were already blaming Republicans for not funding Amtrak enough. First, we have Josh Earnest at the White House, and then Dick Blumenthal, the Connecticut senator.
Republicans, unfortunately, are currently considering legislation at the committee level that would actually cut funding from Amtrak's budget by, I believe, $250 million a year.
Absolutely shocking and disgraceful that right now, even as this tragedy is unfolding, even as we're learning answers to the vital question about the causes of this terrible tragic crash, the House of Representatives is considering cuts to the rail. On the contrary, we should be investing, redoubling our commitment to the quality and reliability of tracks and equipment.
Jim, who cares why this happened? We just need to redouble our efforts and our spending on Amtrak.
Well, in defense of the Democrats, Greg, there are a few ways more money could have prevented this crash. One is if the train had been weighed down with so much taxpayer money, either in big bags of money, gold bricks, whatever form, it wouldn't have been able to be fast enough to be going too fast going around the curve. Or alternately, maybe around every curve of Amtrak and the train lines across the country, we need to build big cushions made out of bags of taxpayer money. And both of those would have prevented serious problems on this. So this sounds out as the crazy martini for a couple of good reasons, Greg. One among them being literally the bodies are not out of the train yet. And Democrats are quickly rushing to say, well, this is because we didn't spend enough money. And some very bright folks, friends of ours, Molly Hemingway and Ace over at Ace of Spades have observed, all kinds of religious people kind of grapple with the question, why do bad things happen to good people? How could a kind and loving and all-powerful God let something like this happen to somebody like this? Sometimes they look around, try to say, well, is this some sort of punishment for sin? You know, there's big philosophical questions of life. For the left, if something terrible happens, like a plane crash, a train crash, something like a bridge collapse up in Minnesota, it's because we didn't spend enough money. Inevitably, always, it's because the terrible Republicans wouldn't let us spend enough money. And it's kind of their universal answer to everything. And they never say, I mean, we remember, you know, all the infrastructure, you know, oh, rebuilding roads, our crumbling roads and bridges. And I went through all the talk during the stimulus. And we spent $1 bazillion, enormous sums of money on our crumbling infrastructure. And then, of course, within a year, they're right back to the same claim again. Oh, our roads and bridges are crumbling and we need to spend more money. Well, wait, what happened to all the money we spent in the stimulus? Why is it that no matter what amount of money we make, you guys come back with the exact same complaints? Isn't there any level that's enough? And the answer is no, there really isn't any level that's enough. So this entire philosophy of the left, that if you spend enough money, you can disaster-proof life. You can prevent bad things from happening. One, I think, explains a lot about their philosophy. It's kind of a replacement of the role of religion with a belief in the all-powerful, omniscient state. The second thing that I think kind of crazy about this entire discussion of this train crash, Greg, I saw this on CNN yesterday, and I found it more than a little unnerving. So besides the fact it's a 50-mile-an-hour range of track, they're going 106. They realize it's too fast at some point, and they hit the emergency brake. Greg, did you see how much hitting the emergency brake slowed it down?
Got down to 102, I think, right?
Yeah, a whole 4 miles an hour trimmed off. So, great. Nice job, emergency brake. And I'm assuming it got only 4 miles an hour slower, and then there was the crash. And because at that point, it's really not that much of an emergency brake, is it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And I wish there was some moratorium. Obviously, there's free speech, but every time there's, you know, God forbid, a school shooting or some kind of disaster like this, like you said, the liberals always go to more government intervention, usually more government spending. But there's the blame game. If it could just wait 24 hours or 48 hours or wait a week to let the dust settle and families grieve and adjust to life instead of becoming political pawns immediately as they receive this horrific news. I don't know how you would manage to do that, but I just feel for them as they get swept up into just a never-ending Washington debate, it seems.
This is the way our society works right now, and it's probably one of the, if not the worst, it ranks up there as one of the worst trends in American life in our lifetimes, Greg. Everything turns into a partisan football sooner or later. Anyway, happy Thursday, everybody.
Jim, on that note, you are out tomorrow. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.